Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Continuing with Part 1, The Yoga of Divine Works, Chapter 10, page 232, The Three Modes of Nature. To transcend the natural action of the lower prakriti is indispensable to the soul, if it is to be free in itself and free in its works. Harmonious subjection to this actual universal nature, a condition of good and perfect work for the natural instruments, is not an ideal for the soul, which should rather be subject to God and His Shakti, but master of its own nature. As agent or as channel of the Supreme Will, it must determine by its vision and sanction, or refusal, the use that shall be made of the storage of energy, the conditions of environment, the rhythm of combined movement which are provided by Prakriti for the labor of the natural instruments, mind, life, and body. But this inferior nature can only be mastered if she is surmounted and used from above. And this can only be done by a transcendence of her forces, qualities, and modes of action. Otherwise, we are subject to her conditions and helplessly dominated by her, not free in the spirit. The idea of the three essential modes of nature is a creation of the ancient Indian thinkers, and its truth is not at once obvious, because it was the result of long psychological experiment and profound internal experience. Therefore, without a long inner experience, without intimate self-observation and intuitive perception of the nature forces, it is difficult to grasp accurately or firmly utilize. Still, certain broad indications may help the seeker on the way of works to understand, analyze, and control by his assent or refusal the combinations of his own nature. These modes are termed in the Indian books qualities, gunas, and are given the names sattva, rajas, tamas. Sattva is the force of equilibrium and translates in quality as good and harmony and happiness and light. Rajas is the force of kinesis and translates in quality as struggle and effort, passion and action. Tamas is the force of inconscience and inertia and translates in quality as obscurity and incapacity and inaction. Ordinarily used for psychological self-analysis, these distinctions are valid also in physical nature. Each thing and every existence in the lower prakriti contains them, and its process and dynamic form are the result of the interaction of these qualitative powers. Every form of things, whether animate or inanimate, is a constantly maintained poise of natural forces in motion, and is subject to an unending stream of helpful, disturbing, or disintegrating contacts from other combinations of forces that surround it. Our own nature of mind, life, and body is nothing else than such a formative combination and poise. In the reception of the environing contacts, and the reaction to them, the three modes determine the temper of the recipient and the character of the response. Inert and inept, he may suffer them without any responsive reaction, any motion of self-defense, or any capacity of assimilation and adjustment. This is the mode of tamas, the way of inertia. The stigmata of tamas are blindness and unconsciousness, and incapacity and unintelligence, sloth and indolence and inactivity, and mechanical routine, and the mind's torpor, and the life's sleep, and the soul's slumber. Its effect, if uncorrected by other elements, can be nothing but disintegration of the form or the poise of the nature without any new creation or new equilibrium or force of kinetic progress. At the heart of this inert impotence is the principle of ignorance, and an inability or slothful unwillingness to comprehend, seize and manage the stimulating or assailing contact, the suggestion of environing forces, and their urge towards fresh experience. On the other hand, the recipient of nature's contacts, touched and stimulated, solicited or assailed by her forces, may react to the pressure or against it. She allows, encourages, impels him to strive, to resist, to attempt, to dominate or engross his environment, to assert his will, to fight and create and conquer. This is the mode of Rajas, the way of passion and action and the thirst of desire. Struggle and change and new creation, victory and defeat, and joy and suffering, and hope and disappointment are its children, and build the many-colored house of life in which it takes its pleasure. But its knowledge is an imperfect or a false knowledge, and brings with it ignorant effort, error, a constant misadjustment, pain of attachment, disappointed desire, grief of loss and failure. The gift of Rajas is kinetic force, energy, activity, the power that creates and acts and can overcome. But it moves in the wrong lights or the half-lights of the ignorance, and it is perverted by the touch of the asura, rakshasa, and pishacha, the arrogant ignorance of the human mind and its self-satisfied perversions and presumptuous errors, the pride and vanity and ambition, the cruelty and tyranny and beast wrath and violence, the selfishness and baseness and hypocrisy and treachery and vile meanness, the lust and greed and rapacity, the jealousy, envy, and bottomless ingratitude that disfigure the earth nature are the natural children of this indispensable but strong and dangerous turn of nature. But the embodied being is not limited to these two modes of prakriti. There is a better and more enlightened way in which he can deal with surrounding impacts and the stream of the world forces. There is possible a reception and reaction with clear comprehension, poise, and balance. This way of natural being has the power that, because it understands, sympathizes, it fathoms and controls and develops nature's urge and her ways. It has an intelligence that penetrates her processes and her significances and can assimilate and utilize. There is a lucid response that is not overpowered, but adjusts, corrects, adapts, harmonizes, elicits the best in all things. This is the mode of sattva, the turn of nature that is full of light and poise, directed to good, to knowledge, to delight and beauty, to happiness, right understanding, right equilibrium, right order. Its temperament is the opulence of a bright clearness of knowledge and a lucent warmth of sympathy and closeness, a fineness and enlightenment, a governed energy, an accomplished harmony and poise of the whole being is the consummate achievement of the sattvic nature. No existence is cast entirely in the single mold of any of these three modes of the cosmic force? All three are present in everyone and everywhere. There is a constant combining and separation of their shifting relations and interpenetrating influences, often a conflict, a wrestling of forces, a struggle to dominate each other. All have, in great or in small extent or degree, even if sometimes in a hardly appreciable minimum, their sattvic states and clear tracts of inchoate tendencies of light, clarity, and happiness, fine adaptation and sympathy with the environment, intelligence, poise, right mind, right will and feeling, right impulse, virtue, order. All have their rajasic moods and impulses, and turbid parts of desire and passion and struggle, perversion and falsehood and error, unbalanced joy and sorrow, aggressive push to work and eager creation, and strong or bold or fiery or fierce reactions to the pressure of the environment and to life's assaults and offers. All have their tamasic states and constant obscure parts, their moments or points of unconsciousness, their long habit or their temporary velleities of weak resignation or dull acceptance, their constitutional feeblenesses or movements of fatigue, negligence and indolence, and their lapses into ignorance and incapacity, depression and fear and cowardly recoil or submission to the environment and to the pressure of men and events and forces. Each one of us is sattvic in some directions of his energy of nature or in some parts of his mind or character, in others rajasic, tamasic in others. According as one or other of the modes usually dominates his general temperament and type of mind and turn of action, it is said of him that he is the sattvic, the rajasic, or the tamasic man. But few are always of one kind, and none is entire in his kind. The wise are not always or wholly wise. The intelligent are intelligent only in patches. The saint suppresses in himself many unsaintly movements, and the evil are not entirely evil. The dullest has his unexpected or unused and undeveloped capacities, the most timorous his moments or his way of courage, the helpless and the weakling a latent part of strength in his nature. The dominant gunas are not the essential soul type of the embodied being, but only the index of the formation he has made. When the sadhaka has once stood back from the action of prakriti within him or upon him, and not interfering, not amending or inhibiting, not choosing or deciding, allowed its play, and analyzed and watched the process, he soon discovers that her modes are self-dependent and work as a machine once put in action works by its own structure and propelling forces. The force and the propulsion come from prakriti and not from the creature. Then he realizes how mistaken was his impression that his mind was the doer of his works. His mind was only a small part of him and a creation, an engine of nature. Nature was acting all the while in her own modes, moving the three general qualities about as a girl might play with her puppets. His ego was all along a tool and plaything. His character and intelligence, his moral qualities and mental powers, his creations and works and exploits, his anger and forbearance, his cruelty and mercy, his love and his hatred, his sin and his virtue, his light and his darkness, his passion of joy and his anguish of sorrow, were the play of nature, to which the soul, attracted, one and subjective, lent its passive concurrence. And yet the determinism of nature or force is not all. The soul has a word to say in the matter, but the secret soul, the Purusha, not the mind or the ego. Since these are not independent entities, they are parts of nature. For the soul's sanction is needed for the play, and by an inner silent will, as the Lord and giver of the sanction, it can determine the principle of the play and intervene in its combinations. Although the execution in thought and will and act and impulse must still be nature's part and privilege. The Purusha can dictate a harmony for nature to execute, not by interfering in her functions, but by a conscious regard on her, which she transmutes at once or after much difficulty, into translating idea and dynamic impotence and significant figure. The next reading will continue with the second half of this chapter.